You're listening to the Comic Crusaders Podcast. I am your host, Al Mega, CEO of Comic Crusaders and Undercover Capes. In this show, I'm sitting down with creators from all walks of life to talk about inspiration, process, the lessons they've learned, and a whole lot more.
Hey, yo, what up, mi gente? You know what it is, your boy, Al Mega. Welcome to a brand new Comic Crusaders podcast. And today, oh man, we have a writer and artist extraordinaire. He has worked with a multitude of labels, man. Let me tell you, he's doing some savage stuff and he's doing some stuff from hell, but he is tearing it up all over the place, baby. He is an urban barbarian, the one, the only. Welcome to the stage, Mr. Dave Finosian. How you doing?
Doing good. I like that. It's like the Pride intros from, remember the old MMA promotion?
Oh, let's go. Let's go, baby. You got way to get down tonight or what?
Oh, yeah. This is going to be fun. I like the energy already. It's good.
Yeah. Because this is what it is, man. You guys work on some dope books. You continue to do amazing stuff in your craft. But I'm happy to have you here for the first time myself. So, you know, I got to dig into some origin stories as we do here on the Comic Crusaders podcast. And then a bit about yourself. Let us know where you're originally from. And most importantly, what was the first thing that you ever fell in love with in fandom?
Well, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and it was either Batman or Tarzan, because my dad got me those oversized DC comics that were like huge. They're probably like half the size of me at that point. So
the Treasury joints?
Yeah, Treasury edition. So I got to see like Joe Kubert artwork for Tarzan, and you know, there were some Neil Adams, and I forget who. The Neil Adams stuff stuck out for me as a kid, you know, because I kept the books. So looking back, you know, those were the best drawn.
Oh, you kept them since you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. I got my...
Nice. Did you have a tribe outside of your family growing up that was into what you liked, if you will?
Yeah, by the time my family moved to Florida,
Where in Florida?
Yeah, where in Florida is like Central Florida.
All right.
It was like, you know where Cocoa Beach is?
I lived in Cocoa.
Yeah, I grew up in Millward.
Okay, bet.
Yeah, so it's not too far from there. When I was going to school, Kelly Slater was going to school in Cocoa Beach. So,
hey.
it was interesting. I mean, so all my friends, for the most part, about half of them were into comic books and Dungeons and Dragons, or if they weren't into that stuff, I tried to push them in that direction.
Of course,
it was fun. I started buying comic books that. I kind of got back into them once that Conan movie came out, and my dad bought a Savage Sword of Conan, like black and white magazine for me.
But
I dig it. And then I started seeing like the old, you know,
yeah, mama started me, bro, on the Savage Sword. She ain't know she was buying 8-year-old me some titty magazine with all blood and guts though and everything. I loved them. Fell in love.
Yeah, those were great issues. And they had advertisements for like other comics in there. So that kind of like opened my eyes to like X-Men. You know, I thought that would be a cool book to check out. I started going to 7-Eleven and seeing the spinning racks and got into that. And then finally I was like, man, there's got to be places to get back issues. And I found like a local comic book store that was, you know, one of those old school comic book stores where you walk in, you're stepping over.
Did you find that Dallas?
Books, and there's like a ham sandwich over here, and there's a fish tank there, and you know, it's a weird place.
I gotta ask though, how did you find it? Because obviously, you know, we look of the same age, you know, pre-internet days in the hunt, you know, it wasn't that easy. We couldn't just Google addresses.
I'm sure it was like the phone book. It was the yellow pages at that point. Yeah, I don't know how I came across this place. It was in, oh god, it was somewhere in the middle of Melbourne. But I of course, I was there as much as I could get over there. And the store owner would be like on Wednesdays. I don't know if it was Wednesdays back then or Tuesdays or whatever the day was when they deliver the comics.
Yeah.
He'd ask me to help out. And he goes, I could pay you in, you know, big gulps or comics. What do you want? And of course, it was comics. So
hell yeah. Give me some books, baby. All right. So here you are. Wow. You got to help on a comic shop. I'm jealous. I never got that opportunity.
It's a pest. I was always there. Yeah.
That's dope. All right. So when did the passion, you know, get ignited in you to like, you know, get that creative spark and say, you know what? I want to do something with this.
I was about 14 years old, I'd say.
All right.
Yeah. And I was big into Dungeons and Dragons and those books. I don't know if you ever played those games, but the books were expensive for a kid. So, and my parents weren't going to buy them for me. So I started mowing lawns so I could pay for enough money to put an ad in the back of this thing called Dragon Magazine, where you could write to me and I'd take your character and draw it for you for like 10 bucks, 20 bucks. If it was.
Wow.
Yeah. So it started getting me into.
Wait for the kids here. I want them to learn this. So you, how much did the ad cost you back then?
The ad was probably like 179 bucks. I love that I know the numbers still, because that was a lot of money for a 14-year-old kid.
Absolutely. And that was for a placement for that one magazine for the month, right?
Yeah.
But so did you have a quick return on your investment, or did it take time?
Well, no, I had to mow a lot of lawns to get that money. So, I mowed lawns, did it odd jobs, and ruined a lot of neighbors' yards to get that money. And then and then the thing started paying for itself, which was nice. It was, and plus every day after school, I would be drawing. So it kept me in practice and kept me doing it and getting better at the craft.
Well, awesome. All right. So as you got better, talk to me then, you know, stepping into the world, when did you start stepping into the sense of, okay, I want to do this professional, and what steps did you take to start stepping in?
Well, I started looking at some of the gaming companies, and I would just write to their PO box and send them samples of my artwork saying, if, you know, I'd like to illustrate these game modules, their adventures. And, you know, I never said, hey, I'm, you know, 15 or 14 or 16.
Yeah.
I just, you know, went at it. And then at conventions, I met some pencilers and some anchors, and I would get small backup stories and mostly even in high school, I was working for small companies like Eternity, which later became Malibu Comics. Blocked by Marvel. Before that, I was working, I think, for AC Comics, just on a very small, a few pages here and there. But Eric Larson was working for AC Comics at the time. And Jerry Ordway was doing covers. John Beatty was doing work. Yeah. The guys who did Cobalt Blue, I forget, Mike Gustavich was working for them.
What?
It just gave me a lot of experience and confidence.
Access as a young man. Holy shit.
Yeah, I was driven. I wanted money.
Yeah, man, I hear you. You know, the sacrifice, right, must be made.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, but you do something you love, it doesn't feel like work as much.
Absolutely not. All right, so what was that first real project life like? When did you land when you put the big leagues to you? What was that one?
I felt like when I worked at this company, Blackthorn Comics, I think that's what it was called, and we did, it was BattleTech number one or something like that. And I was inking it, I believe, and getting $25 a page.
Oh, wow. And,
which was, you know, I could make more money doing those character drawings that I had set up in the back of that magazine, but because it took about 3 hours to 6 hours to ink a page. But, you know, I knew that it would lead to something. I knew I'd eventually be at Marvel or something, hopefully. I had done that tryout book as well. That Marvel trial. I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, really?
It was a Marvel tryout book.
How'd that look?
That went well. I got a response from Marvel, and they said, you know, they sent me all sorts of information about.
Well, that's fire.
You know, if when you come work for us, this is what we can do, and this is how much money you'll make, and it was interesting.
I'm pretty sure you were excited. I mean, how young were you when that op came?
That was about 14 years old.
Holy shit, this folks.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like I have a son who's 9, and I'm looking at him and I'm like, wow, that's 5 years from now for him.
Get it moving, son.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's gonna if he's smart, he's not gonna get into it. So
are you gonna definitely steer him away from this?
Well, I don't think he's I mean he likes comics, he likes, you know, pop culture, or, you know, everything that goes with it, but I don't think he's gonna, you know, become a comic book professional. I I don't, you know, he doesn't show any interest in, like, he likes drawing, but he's not going to sit there and draw a page or, you know.
Gotcha. I hear you. This generation is way different.
Yeah, totally. I mean, he might, who knows? I don't know what this kid's going to do. It'll be interesting. That's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. So what would you consider the first dream project that you landed?
I mean, the day I got to work for Marvel and I was doing backups for them, that was pretty cool. I was inking Mark Bagley on Captain America. We were both, Mark had won that, Mark Bagley won the Marvel tryout thing.
Yeah.
And so years later, he was still kind of breaking into Marvel. He didn't have a regular book yet. They just had him on backups and he was doing backups for Captain America. And I was his anchor. And then eventually I was his finisher on that, which means like he would turn in breakdowns and I'd finish them up and tighten up the pencils and then ink them.
Oh, okay. Cool. Excellent. All right. So, you know, we're talking about you being artists because you draw, you've done kick-ass work, but you know, how did that lead into you stepping into writing? Because, you know, you are in fact, you know, stepping into the writing world with a particular book that you're writing now.
Yeah. Thanks for putting up the red sun. Yeah, I did a little bit of writing when I broke into comics, but not that much. And then I did some copywriting when I was in advertising. But I was always writing in high school, and that was my dream. My art heroes were guys like, you know, John Byrne and Walt Simonson and Frank Miller. I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to make my own comic books. So I think it was kind of a natural progression. So I started. Robert Kirkman gave me a big break when he let me do my own creator-owned at Skybound called Slots. And when I did that, I was like, now I'm hooked. And the only writer I've worked with since that time is on a big project is Scott Snyder for Canary.
No bet. Scott's awesome. So I'm gonna
You can't say no to that. I mean,
bro. Yeah. So was it a different learning curve though? I mean, you know, again, here you are putting artistry and writing now together. I mean, is it a heavier load? You know, how do you feel about that creative process?
I mean, I loved it. I loved every bit of it. And I like seeing how other artists will interpret like scripts that I'll turn in. You know, I thought that would be a little, you know, strange at first because I know exactly how I would draw that page. Yeah. So, but it's a very fun experience. I really enjoy seeing another artist tackle things. So,
yo, Daniel, what's popping, homie? Thanks for tuning in. So, All right. Now that you said that, you envision it one way and then someone submits something. I mean, was it way different than you thought in your head?
Always. I mean, it's always way different. No matter how much art direction you give for a panel description, like how you see it, what angles you're looking at, you know, a lot it depends on the writer. Some writers I've worked with in the past before I was writing, it was just off plot. In fact, Scott Snyder and I for Canary is just a plot. And then I go in and kind of interpret what we want. And then Scott comes back later and he would just do the scripting and, you know, where who's saying what and more of the storytelling. But in other cases, it would be very descriptive. Like, I want this panel to be this size. I want these things in the panel. I want you looking at the scene from, you know, from the top, maybe, you know, some writers are very detailed. And I think I'm somewhere in between. So I try to cater it to the artist I'm working with. You know, if it's a friend of mine, we kind of think the same way. I think he knows what I'm looking for, ideally. But if it's someone I've never worked with before, you know, I have to, if I really want a scene to be told in a certain way, I have to be descriptive. I have to set the pacing.
There we go.
Yeah. So for, like for Red Sonja, for instance, very talented Italian artist, and he, you know, he always gives me something different than I had envisioned. But I mean, it's a beautiful different direction. He's telling the exact same story that I'm writing, but how he's telling it, the angles he's choosing, the way he's cropping things, the composition, all of that is always like a pleasant surprise.
Since you told me that you are a Conan guy growing up,
I love Conan.
I gotta love it. So how do you approach character development here when approaching, you know, Red Sonja, especially the Savage Red Sonja of that. I mean, yeah. How do you incorporate your artistic vision into the narrative and what you're doing here?
Well, I mean, I had this story for Savage Red Sonja, at least the first two issues, written about 8 years ago, maybe even longer. And it's just now that Dynamite approached me and asked me if I was interested in maybe, or maybe I approached them and said, hey, what do you think about this stuff? Because now I had a bunch of writing credits under my belt, and they were like, yeah, let's do it. And I was shocked. I was pretty shocked and thrilled because, you know, Red Sonja is another Robert E. Howard creation. I'm a big fan of everything that man wrote. So, you know, it was kind of a natural that I would jump on something like this. And I'm real happy with the way it came out. I'm thrilled I get to do covers. We got Frank Cho doing covers. We have an Arthur Adams cover for number one. I mean, as a fan, I was thrilled. I'm still thrilled. I wrote this other book called Black Tape that just finished up not too long ago. And we had some amazing covers there as well. We had Joe Quesada on one issue. I got my buddy Dave Johnson, Kerry Nord's an amazing Conan artist. I mean, he's an amazing artist in general, but I loved his Conan. He's, you know, he's terrific.
Yeah, definitely. I put Punisher up on the wall right up there.
Oh.
Down by him.
Yeah, no, Kerry's great. We had Mike Diodato do some covers. Yeah, so it's nice to work with friends of yours and people you know and get them on board. And, you know, to see something printed and go to a comic book shop and see it there, to me, I'm still a fan. So it's very exciting. You know, I look at it like kind of geeking out. It's almost hard to believe sometimes that your work is still there because, you know, regardless of how old you are and what you've experienced, you still kind of have a construct of who you are in your head. And, you know, I still feel like a, you know, 18-year-old kid, basically, you know, inside. So it's a real privilege and honor to be a part of the business.
You and I both, sometimes the things that happen, I'm like, really? I don't understand. But let me ask you here, what elements of Red Sonja's characters resonate with you, and how do these resonate in your portrayal of her, if you will?
Well, you know what I liked about her is that she was kind of thrust into it. And over the years, depending on who's publishing, in this case, the majority of the publishing has been done by Dynamite at this point. And her origin is, it's kind of a touchy one. And so a lot of times writers will shy away from it. They won't know necessarily, or they just simply, it's a decision on their behalf not to focus on the true nature of her origins. Yeah. The way we saw them when they first showed up, like when Howard Chaykin had, you probably remember from Savage Sword of Conan, like, unfortunately, you know, what happened to her was, to put it nicely, compromised and left there with her parents killed, and this goddess comes to her and says, look, I can give you revenge. And an oath is taken. And in that oath, part of it is she can't be with someone like a partner unless they best her in combat.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a heavy mantle. Of course, she wants revenge. But the part of the crux of Savage Red Sonja for me was this person living with a choice they made when they were young that they're still have to hold on to this day. And sometimes choices we've made a long time ago don't fit who we are today. And I want to kind of explore that with her character.
Oh, man. We're going to get
some heavy stuff, but obviously there's lots of violence and adventure. And I wanted it to be like a story that if I was a kid reading it, I'd be like, oh, man, this is my favorite Red Sonja story. But I think every writer would want that. It's not unusual.
Has any of your previous work, you know, kind of influenced what you bring in into the game here with Sonja?
No, I'd say this is pretty different. I mean, with Alice Ever After, you know, that's a continuation of the Alice in Wonderland stories. Like, how would it be for Alice to be an adult, having gone through what she's gone through? And is she still having these trips to Wonderland, et cetera? So that was, you know, a lot of writers always go, oh, the story kind of tells itself. And for me, that always feels true when I'm writing this stuff. It always feels like the story is taking over and I'm just, you know, transcribing what's happening, what I'm seeing unfold.
All right. So let me ask you here. Boom!
doing some big stuff that was recently announced. I mean, because, you know, Tommy Fallon is once again expanding the Spawn Universal titles.
Yeah.
Was with that, we got some good stuff, amazing creators on board, amazing cover artists. I mean, talk about this. I mean, have you been a Spawn fan? Are you having fun? I mean, look at this boy right here on this cover. Woo! He look crazy. What's popping?
Yeah. That one, I mean, I got to be there at Image when Spawn was basically launching because I was working for Silvestri and Rob Liefeld at the time. So I could, and I even worked a tiny, tiny bit with Todd doing like inking some little drawings. And I was the first guy to ink Greg Capullo on Spawn.
Okay.
So it was when I got the call to start doing, I think it was four covers for the Spawn universe. You know, I was flipping out because it's like everything coming full circle. And I asked my son what his favorite character in the Spawn universe was, and it's Cygor here. So I had to draw that one, and I wanted to make it as crazy and creepy as possible. I remember all those Brian Boland Animal Man covers that he used to do in the 90s. I used to say, I didn't like the comic book, but I loved the covers. So I would tear off the covers. I had like a Brian Boland cover folder for inspiration. So I wanted to put, it's still nowhere near what Brian Boland would do, but I wanted to put that amount of work into, you know, what I was capable of to do a cover. And that's
Brian Boland is a legend, but please, please, Dan, don't sell yourself. So, I mean, look at this. Holy hell, bro.
Thanks, man.
Love here. I don't even know which one I like more yet. I feel like a chick here. I'm so undecided.
My wife looking at coats.
Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. I want them both. Screw it.
Yeah.
Hot. Yeah.
It was, I love, this is probably my favorite one. I don't know. There's another one I did, the one that you have on the screen right now behind both of us.
Yeah. We're going to bring that up too in a minute, man.
Oh.
Oh, look at this. Oh, this. Where was your head at, yo? Because this is sick.
This character is just like, oozy. It's like a typical Todd and Greg character where it's just like complete horror. So I just wanted to make it as creepy as possible. Like, I don't know. I this one took me the longest actually because I kept going back and forth on the color. Like at first it was really colorful, but then I thought, you know, let's desaturate the whole thing and just make the essential parts really stand out. Yeah. And, you know, I think this one was for an actual Spawn issue. Am I correct? I don't know.
Yeah, this is sick. Absolutely sick.
Oh, thanks,
absolutely,
man.
Sick.
Yeah, look, my son's, of course, into, you know, all sorts of, he's already seen Predator. He, you know, he's fascinated by the minigun from Predator. I think that was his favorite scene with Jesse the Body Ventura. Forrest.
Look. This is crazy, though. I'm digging it. I can't get over it. Yeah, sure. The colors, everything on this just works. And it is absolute creepiness because I would run. And that is actually how you sweat in Florida, folks, you know, especially around June.
Oh, man. Thanks. Glad you dig it. Oh, yeah. And I'm doing the Canary series.
Yeah.
So Gunslinger Spawn, like if I was to draw any book for Todd, it would probably be this one.
That's the one. That's the one you want.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to do something like that. It'd be a blast.
Dude, you murdered this, bro.
Is Brett Booth is the regular artist, right?
Yes.
We'd have to break Brett's hands. You know, I don't know where he lives.
Let me know what con he's at.
Yeah, what kind of convention that Brett's at and take care of him. No, Brett's killing it.
He is.
On his Twitter, I don't know if you follow Brett on Twitter, but...
No, I do. Demon Puppy.
yeah, he's you know, I love seeing all the Spawn stuff he does.
But not just that, even when he brings it back sometimes, because I go back to the Wildstorm day when it was in Backlash and all that shit. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. I'm a big fan, but dude, bro, look at this, bro. This is so fire. I mean, all right, give me a tease. What would you do? What would you do right now? What would you love to see Gunslinger Spawn do in your head? Is there anything you want to tease? If you have an idea.
If I had the chance to write and draw it?
Yeah. Wait, what would you set them at? Maybe.
I don't know. I'd sort of, I don't know if it would take place in a town. I might have him, he had just been in a horrible battle, most likely. And he doesn't know if he's alive or dead. And he's kind of repairing. And during that, he's like, I'd bring back all like the classic Spawn villains and have them like almost dreams. Like, we don't know if he's dreaming or not, you know, while he's fighting them. He doesn't. And then, of course, at the end, he has been fighting them. So
that would be fun. And here we go, dude. This is just Raven Spawn. Holy shit, bro. Where were you at with this? Because, when I saw this, again, because we're the same breed with that black and white. Bro, yeah. You fucking murdered this fucking story.
This one was a lot of fun to draw. I love Raven, so yeah. That was a no-brainer for me to pick this character. And then to color it, and you know, I just got as stark as possible with it, but I also didn't want to lose all that detail because there's, you know, tons and tons of detail on these things. Obviously I'm trying to impress Todd on every single one of these, and he was real nice. Todd, not only does Todd pay well, but he gave me a bonus on all these things too, which was no other publisher just does that arbitrarily for a cover, you know, and that's just goes to show you what kind of guy he is. No, you know, Todd just loves comics. He understands what the comic book artists go through, and he, you know, is kind of him. He didn't have to do that. He was already paying me a nice cover rate.
I mean, look at that cover, Chris. You got to pick this up right there. This is the Urban Barbarian, the Empanoos. I mean, look at that amazing cover, and then look at it in color. Woohoo! Yo.
Yeah, that's fun. I like that one. That, if I was a kid, that's the type of poster I'd want. And that's the way I approach most of the things I do is, and that's thanks a lot to artists like Dave Johnson explaining like, hey, what makes a cover? You know, he's like, you know, every cover should be something that someone wants to hang on their wall, ideally, you know, and not every cover can be that, but like if you do it to the best of your ability and, you know, every now and then they come out well enough and,
Well, I'm 100 with you. I want a poster of this signed by you because this is insanely sick. Where did you reach on design here? Because this just looks great. I mean, look at that, homie. You really went in, bro.
Yeah, I had fun. It's hard not to have fun, you know, with the characters that he creates. You know, these are great characters. They're all sick. Just look at the guy's toy line. Like, each toy is a masterpiece.
He's making many of us very broke nowadays.
That's his superpower.
Absolutely. Holy shit. Now, but he's the man. Yeah, I love the product. He does great stuff. I mean, when he's working with people like you, bringing me covers like this, it's like, shit. Man, I mean, I almost buy every variant cover. I'm like, I can't help it. What is only with, and I only do this with the Spawn ones, mind you. Only.
How many variants do they do per issue?
Oh my God! It can get to about 4 or 5 sometimes.
Oh yeah! Wow.
Yeah.
I know with Dynamite, like with Red Sonja, there is, you know, any number of variants per issue.
They get about F-O-G. Yeah, they go by letter. They try to trick you by giving you letters that way you don't count.
Yeah, you know you're reading and you didn't sign up for that.
I mean, again, sometimes you can't help it. You want to, you know, you see, it's just the cover art, you know? Yeah, sometimes you see two pieces of beautiful art. One of them you want to hang on the wall, you know, now that they got those beautiful frames that you could do something on, you know? So why not? You can display your comics so differently nowadays. Fans don't have to be shy anymore, my man. Thank you.
No, I love that.
You know?
Yeah. That's kind of a nice thing. Like, it's very accepted. I think the term geek doesn't apply anymore, you know?
Yeah, what's a geek, man? That's a good term. It's not slanderous anymore.
Yeah, well, it used to be an insult. Now, if you're a comic book geek, you're on top of it, and you know you're filled. I'm going to be at the LA convention this weekend, and there's going to be thousands of geeks that are just regular people that have no love comics.
You're getting ahead of me here talking about cons. Though now, you know what?
Sorry,
yeah, baby, it's all right. You get an answer. What's your boot number? People got to see.
You know what? I don't know. I'm with CSA Comic Sketch Arts, and they have their own section. We're usually towards the back of Artist Alley.
All right. What are you taking commissions early, taking on order, or you're going to do those things on site? What's going on?
I'll probably do remarks, and that's about it. I'd just be draw like signing and doing remarks. I really don't do commissions at the shows anymore because, for whatever reason, you know, I had that Drink and Draw podcast live stream YouTube show, and we draw live on that show. And for whatever reason, there's no stage fright or anything. I don't mind drawing in front of people, but
yeah,
what happened was if I did it like a it would always turn out like the worst commission I've done. That's the one that gets blasted online. So I'm like, you know what? If I do a commission, I'm going to do it at home in my studio. And I want to make sure it's also, I have a philosophy. Like I don't have a problem if Marvel Comics or DC or Image is paying me money to do a cover. It's a lot of money to do it. But when it's a person like a fan that's taking their money out of their paycheck, they're not going to publish it and they're going to pay me what I get paid, I gotta do an extra good job on that commission for them because it fills me not anxiety, but it's a little bit more pressure. I don't feel the pressure if something's gonna, you know, maybe it should be the opposite for some artists. I don't know, but for me, that's how I internalize it.
My God, listen, we get there, we get our book signed because that's what we need. We need to keep those hands steady and safe so you keep make the artwork, bro. All right. So let me ask you something here. You know, just comic book industry wise, so you've been in the business for a while. How do you believe the comic book industry has evolved, if at all, and what changes have impacted your approach to storytelling and art?
Well, I think there's a broader, like when I got into it, the indie books were really, really indie books. They're hard to find. Even your local comic book shop might not carry them. It depends on, you know, who they were. Now I think, you know, superheroes is still predominant. It's predominantly superheroes, but I know you got guys like Ed Brubaker with all his crime comics with Sean Phillips turning out amazing work. I mean, there's so much out there. There's this one new kid, I think she's from Ireland, Zoe Thorogood, who just won the Eisners. I mean, she's doing very, you know, she's doing the stuff that are, in my opinion, like true indie comics. Like she's young, so you don't even know what the potential this girl has. And there's a lot of artists out there like that are just pushing the medium, thinking different ways, drawing in ways that they're comfortable drawing, and they're not like worried about, oh, this has to look like Jim Lee, or this has to look like John Byrne, depending on how old you are, or this has to look like, you know, you name it. So they're just marching to the beat of their drum. And I think when you do that, you come out with someone that is going to develop more and more into the most creative version of themselves that they can be. So it's nice to watch people like that evolve. And, Daniel Warren Johnson, for instance. I mean, that's incredible. And big fan of whatever he does. And he doesn't draw like everybody else. He draws like Daniel Warren Johnson. I appreciate that. So
I love it. I love that style too. You know, it's funny. Like I started to show you that for me, that's that heavy metal. Really just hitting it. Let's go. Love it. Your artwork, man. I mean, do you listen? What type of music you listen to? You get creative, man. Cause your shit does hit hard, like some rock and roll metal. You listen to some symphony. Cause I would doubt that.
I do sometimes. It depends on what I'm writing. So if I'm writing, say, Alice Ever After, then I'm listening to like horror movie scores, like so it's almost classical music, but it's horror music. It's a blend of different genres. If I'm doing something like Savage Red Sonja, I've got the soundtracks Conan going. If I'm doing, you know, regular comic books, it's probably, you know, heavy metal or some alt band, you know, some alt station on Sirius XM. But, you know, I try to make sure the music mirrors the subject matter. So, because it does find its way into the work, you know.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Love it. It's symbiotic, man. That's why I love it. I love it. All right. So now we talked about what cons you're going to be. So is LA going to be your last con of the year?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's anything else coming up as far as I know. In January, there's a few. I think there's two conventions. But this is the last con for the year. And you know, a lot of my friends are coming down for it. It should be a good time. That con keeps getting better each year. I'm surprised.
Yeah, man. I was hoping to go this year, but it's time didn't allow, unfortunately, to get things done, tellies and all that.
Hopefully next year it'll be the time that I get out there. Hopefully meet you in person too, you know, and keep adding to your friends list then that show up.
Yeah, that'll be good. Thanks, Al.
You hang out. Hell yeah, kid. If you drink or you smoke, don't you worry. I got you, buddy. What up? Yeah, bro. We have a good time. All right, so last piece here. What type of advice would you give to those up-and-comers, you know, trying to step into the game nowadays, especially compared to when you stepped in the game?
I don't know. It's pretty interesting time to be in comic books. I mean, everybody has their opinions as far as, you know, is it business thriving? Is it, you know, not thriving? I think it's ever since I've been in the business, I've been hearing that, except for the, like, 3-4 years of that golden era of Image Comics. It's been a tumultuous sort of thing. And I think comic book artists and writers need to remember that there's going to be artists that are struggling and there's going to be some that are thriving. And to look at the artists and writers that are thriving, see what they're doing, how they're doing it. And don't necessarily copy them, but, you know, if you're on Instagram, and I know you're on Instagram, it's bad as it is that we're seeing a lot of ads come up or different people we don't follow. There's a lot of inspirational stuff on Instagram as far as like how to meet your goals. And I think that's very important to kind of look, create role models and go, look, I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to put the hard work in. And it does pay off. There's an artist who has come to Drink and Draw, this kid, Chris Anderson. And when he started, he was a decent enough artist. He wasn't ready for really too many publications. He applied himself. This guy's gotten better and better. I see him on Facebook and Instagram, and every week he's got something, you know, similar to those other artists I mentioned. He's followed his own path. He doesn't look like anybody else, but he's creatively carving a path for himself. And that sort of drive and belief in yourself is what's going to get other people to believe in you. You know, we see that and we latch onto that, you know. It's why we have role models. So sometimes you got to behave like a role model. You know, you got to just push forward and go, you know what? Nobody's seen this sort of thing before, but now they're going to see it.
Absolutely agreed on all that. Great points. Cool. Folks, that make a move, baby. You got this. Don't you ever
right.
Got this. Make a move. Shake a move, kiddo. So like Dan has been doing the business. He's been here for a while. He's going to keep on going. You can check him out at LA Comic Con. You know what else you could do? Follow him on socials at Urban Barbarian. I mean, there you go. Where did you come up with the name to? Is that just includes a Conan fan and you had to go?
No, it was I was dating this girl and it was an insult she threw my way.
Really?
But you know what? I liked it.
I love it.
Probably because there's the name Barbarian in there, but I was like, you know what? I'll keep that, you know.
I am digging the hell out. Oh, man. That's a wonderful artist. Better than mine, because Al Mega came out of Rock Band, the video game. I was just some girl from Georgia. I didn't want to give her my real name. She go, what's your name? So I had a Megatron figure, like, clothing. That's my favorite character. You know, it's Al. So I said, Al Mega. Oh. And then I started just using it from there. And I was like, all right, and it worked. They loved it. Georgia, and I kicked their ass.
That's a great name. I like it.
Yeah, man. Let's go. I mean, I like Urban Barbarian, even though it comes from an insult. I agree with you. It is. Shit is historical. I love it. Anyway, folks, you know what it is? Follow the big homie. It's not an insult anymore. I mean, it's a legendary name. Nat Panosian, the legendary artist and writer. Pick up those books, man. Go to your LCS, man. Get the Spawn covers. Sign up right now to that Cyrus Red Sonja. You know what? Peruse the library. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff from there on them shows that you're going to have to dive into. I mean, check it out. It'll be amazing work. You will not regret it. You hear me here? It is Omega with the amazing legendary Dan P. You know what it is. Aldo tells you what to do. Hasta la próxima, mi gente. ¡Wepa!
Thank you for listening to the Comic Crusaders podcast. If you like the content, please subscribe and turn on notifications. Also, please visit ComicCrusaders.com and our extended podcast family over at UndercoverCapes.com. And also, make sure to download the Comic Crusaders app on the Google Play Store today.